All right, time for another Tacky Talk. State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy is joining us for what's been almost a weekly update now, Tacky, for like a year and a half.
Yeah, it's now going to be October next week. So we're in the last days of September, and the pandemic is into month, let's see here, started technically in March of 2020 and gets to a full year. So we're basically into March to basically now October, so that's 7 months. So we're 19 months deep essentially into this.
Yeah,
coming in October. So, you know, we're still here, as you can all see, as my thick Boston accent just came through a moment ago.
Here, and we're still here.
You know, it's continue to be a pleasure as we move forward to continue these conversations.
Yeah, I have enjoyed them too. It's been great. I've learned a lot, gotten to know you better personally too, which I appreciate very much. We talked a little bit about reopening the statehouse again. I know we talked about it last week, but where does that stand right now?
We took a vote last week, which oddly enough, we had our interview just before session began to approve an order in the House to provide proof of vaccination of the staff and members. Unless you have a medical reason or sincere religious belief issue. And we also established a special committee composed of most of the House leadership team regarding a timeline for reopening the building. As I've kind of stated multiple times at this stage, you know, we work in a closet. I mean, the freshman class are going to get offices, which is about 8x8 square cardboard box, for lack of a better term, already built. Chairman's offices are not always window facing. I can tell you a funny story about, you know, closets being cleaned out for people in the center of the building to make office space.
Wow.
For different reasons. And we don't have a modern HVAC system. So there is no regular ventilation. We're still forced hot water with a little fan underneath. So it continues to be a complicated issue. The emergency rules have been extended now beyond October 1st to a time indefinite, pursuant to the speaker and the leadership team. And this means that contact tracing is a requirement of coming to the building. You must notify speaker's office. You still require to notify speaker's office of any COVID infection, even if you're not in the building, so they can just do a confirmation and notification of contact tracing. Essential personnel only, again, come to the state house, and people who are non-essential personnel needs to be informing the leadership and actually the whole House, Senate, and Governor's office who's coming, depending on where they're visiting, again, because of contact tracing. So, you know, I don't anticipate us coming back in the winter, depending on how the Delta variant moves. And, you know, we're going to be continuing this remote format for sometime longer.
What do you think about the efforts by the speaker for a vaccine mandate?
No, at this point in time, I mean, the vaccines are proven to reduce severe hospitalization and reduce the number of deaths. The Delta variant is a serious concern because Delta variant can result in you being a carrier despite being fully vaccinated with no symptoms. This week on the Veo, because, you know, you have lunch, you turn on daytime TV before your next video meeting, because why not? You know, two of the hosts tested positive COVID prior to the arrival of Kamala Harris, the vice president, and had to be ushered off the stage and had to isolate the vice president to do an interview. And to my knowledge, the two hosts are not suffering any major fallout from Delta variant. I think it's a Delta variant, I suspect. So,
well, they're claiming they were false positives. That's just new today. I don't know whether that's true or not, but that's what they're claiming.
That's what they're claiming today, which is entirely possible as well.
Right.
Which is why you do multiple tests. But given the idea of the abundance of caution out there, you know, regarding COVID testing, that even get a false positive, you go out. But again, you can also still be asymptomatic.
Oh yeah, I think the Provincetown case was the best example of that for sure.
Absolutely. So, I mean, there's some real life examples now of, you know, things you see in the TV and the news, you know, taped live audience situations, and, you know, the abundance of caution associated with, you know, gatherings at this point. And obviously in case of a vice president, there's a whole national security component as well.
Sure.
I haven't heard of a false positive. That's news for me this morning. But besides the point, you know, it's important that, you know, there's a high safety concern. And obviously, like I said, the Delta variant can still be contagious. However, you may not get sick and you're not guaranteed going to give that to somebody else. Hence, you know, mask wearing indoors in particular, while not mandated, you know, it can make a big difference.
Yeah, well, we've seen it extended already in the public schools, you know, through November 1st, at least. So there's obviously, you know, some benefit to it.
Yeah, there's a higher infection rate than ever among children, even though it's still very small relative to the size of the population. And there are instances of severe illness with children. However, again, it's not a high percentage compared to the rest of the age groups.
Right.
Maybe a vaccine may be approved. Maybe it may be not approved sometime in the next 4 to 6 weeks for 5 to 12-year-olds. But again, the thing I've talked about all last summer into this summer and into this fall now is that children can be carriers. Those of you with children listening, those of us who do not have children listening, know that they do carry a lot of colds and flu and other types of viruses that as a non-child person will pick up from another person as a child with a parent.
Yes, inevitably it's people with no kids that that get all the viruses from the kids.
They learned that the hard way in law school at Knights in New England, where a lot of people had families in night school, a lot of people had kids, and I would be getting sick inadvertently because I was not intentionally getting sick.
From
another parent who has two sick kids at home, but you know, missing a night of law school is actually very hard. You can drop back very quickly if you miss a night of law school. So, I mean, you know, next thing you know, I'm sick and I'm like, how did this happen? So people talk about, you know, not too concerned about the Delta variant, but we live in a world already where we move diseases around very quickly among ourselves that are respiratory, which includes things like the flu and the cold.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there any federal pandemic money that can be used to update the statehouse, Tacky, you know, to improve the ventilation systems?
Yeah, we have money for things like schools, right? But we have money for infrastructure. I do not believe infrastructure counts in terms of like a rehabilitation of the statehouse.
Okay.
I'd be very surprised if there's money in there that says you can rehab the whole building.
Right.
I'd be shocked. But I do believe that, you know, there's going to be some money there regarding better filtration systems and things like that. But, you know, not for a total, you know, I'm sorry. We have to gut the state house.
Really? Okay.
I mean, you have to rip down the ceilings, the walls. You have to cut your way through the building. I mean, this ain't a simple thing. So we're talking big bucks here. But I mean, I suspect there is probably a little bit of money for some safety issues, but I mean, not for full renovation of the building.
Yeah, okay. Speaking of, I know I always ask you about the pandemic relief money and where that stands right now.
The testimonies continue. I believe the next hearing is October 6th. I think October 6th is the next meeting by Ways and Means on more testimony regarding use of the Fed money.
Okay.
I'm getting requests everything from infrastructure to child care to targeted lower socioeconomic communities, people of color, human services. You know, it's been a very wide gamut of emails coming into my office, you know, detailing what they think they should do, including environmental groups, right? As part of infrastructure improvement, you know, environmental groups looking for some investment in our, you know, coastal defenses, rehab of marshes, rehabs of forests, things like that.
Sure.
As part of also using the ARRA money. So,
As evident this week, public transportation, of course.
Of course, on top of that, and it's as you can imagine, when you have this much money available, you know, every interest group has now written into me asking me that, you know, I use this everything for anything they can think of.
Yep. Will there be kind of a public input process going forward?
Well, right now, I believe I think the hearings are by invitation only. I think there will be more opportunity for membership and others to weigh in. Again, obviously holding a conventional public hearing is extremely challenging. However, you know, as I said, I'm still getting a lot of emails and letters. All the members are, as well as Ways and Means. So
yeah,
the public input has been varied and very heavy.
Okay. Curious too, Tacky, about the implementation of the Police Reform Act, specifically the body camera aspect of it. Is that happened already, or is there still a process to go through to make that happen?
There is a process to go through. There is a special commission on the body camera issue, and it has a broad range of people that's on it, including law enforcement, civil rights groups, and members of the Black, Latino, and Asian caucus appointees. So we do not have a formal requirement in state for body cameras, But there is a special commission form for police reform bill that's looking into it right now. I actually do get the notices. My email as a member of the House Asian Caucus of when those meetings occur. I am not a member of the caucus, appoints a member that's not a member of the caucus that has some background in civil rights related law.
Okay.
So we, you know, we and the other appointees are required to find certain people with professional qualifications.
Gotcha. Okay. October 2 has some significance with the state budget, does it not?
Well, we're coming closing on the books.
So yep.
There is, you know, what we like to refer as a supplemental budget, but I refer to it as a closing the book budget.
Right.
You know, a chance to pay for things that are a deficiency. So the most common example I give normally is things like snow removal money.
Yep.
We pay that in May, not in October. But I like to use like an easy example where you don't know what the costs are until the costs appear. Like, we don't know if we're going to get 10 feet of snow or no snow.
Right.
And given its statewide level, we might snow in the Berkshires, but we get nothing in Queens.
That's right. Yeah.
So you could have, like, you know, a terrible winter west of 495, and the state has to pick up those costs while we just get rain on our side, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are things that we don't know what the costs are. And then because of these storms that we had, it seems like every tropical storm made its way up here, every hurricane. You know, obviously we had some wind and water damage throughout the state. You know, fortunately Quincy, despite, you know, some flooding and a lot of wind, you know, we got off all right. I mean, you know, overall.
Yes.
You know, we were in the Cape and a tornado landing in Dennis, I think.
Yep.
You know, tornadoes out in the, we're in the middle part of the state. Mm-hmm. Of course, I can't think of the names right now, as well as other type of windstorm damage. So.
Yes. You know, I think it was the Spencer area. They had some problems. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, some of those costs we picked up by the feds, but we got to front some money.
Right.
And then we're going to close the book. So the final tally of the 2000 FY21 is going to come to a close by the end of October. Because people who delay the tax returns are due October 15th, I think.
I think that's right. Yep.
Unless that's a holiday.
No, it's not. It's a Friday.
Friday. So we got those delay returns. So we're going to finally close the books on the actual numbers.
Right. Okay, so and revenue estimates, or will those be finalized as well for the next fiscal year or no?
December.
On to December, okay.
So administration, finance, and House and Senate Ways and Means will work on a consensus number during the month of December.
Yep.
Once the consensus number is met, the governor's office's budget, which would be put out in late January, mm-hmm. Will reflect that consensus number, unless the governor adds new revenue by fees or taxes. He's not going to create taxes, creates new fees,
right.
Or he finds new reserve funds or grant funds or other federal monies that may appear. And there's always things like, you know, court settlements by the AG's office.
Mm-hmm.
Create small amount. I mean, it's not like creating $100 million, but I mean, it's creating, you know, a man here, a man there. It's very rarely like a massive settlement. So it's not like the Pfizer settlement, right? A huge settlement you see on TV. So, but the state does do small settlements, which will alter the number a bit depending on what happens.
Yeah, well, there was the settlement with the Sackler family, right, over the opioid abuse yeah. cases.
Was that Pfizer? Was that, what's the name of that company? It's not Pfizer. Because obviously I think Pfizer at the time because of vaccines, right?
Right.
I can't think of the name of the company now. Purdue?
Yes, Purdue Pharma.
Purdue Pharma. So, yep. I mean, there's an example of a major settlement that the state will get a portion of. And that won't be baked into the budget because we don't know when it's going to get here and what condition it's going to get here in terms of timing.
Right, okay.
So, you know, that always going to be like a supplemental thing. More times than not, we'll stack it in a trust fund somewhere mm-hmm. and we'll do it in a different day.
Yep.
So, you know, that's kind of an example of an outside budgetary issue that we do not bake in because we cannot guarantee it's going to show up.
Gotcha. Yep.
So, we'll, you know, we'll come to consensus number this fall based on what the economists tell us. We use a combination of state schools, private not-for-profits, and banks
mm-hmm.
to give us economic projections and projection revenues for the state finances, and we kind of look at all that data and figure out where we should be based on the data provided. As you can imagine, the range can be pretty broad depending
yes.
on whose analysis it is. So, yep. But yeah, I mean, that'll be in December.
Okay, things to look forward to. Another thing to look forward to is the new redistricting process.
Yeah, we talked last week. The city may have their stuff ready soon.
It's done.
It's done?
Yeah, city council will be receiving it on Monday night.
All right, I got to call Nikki then and find out what happened.
Well, it's still 30 precincts, so no change in the number of precincts. A little bit of shifting in the wards, but that's about it, she said.
Yeah, I can see that, moving the ward lines around. The House Redistricting Committee is right now moving on these lines, as many of you may be aware, after I repeated myself more than once, that for you to run for my seat, you have to live in my district for one full year from the prior election, meaning the upcoming election is the start mark for one full year residency requirement. And that's pursuant by state constitution.
Right.
It's not a general law, it's a state constitution requirement. So we do need to have lines in place so everybody knows if they desire to run for state representative, they are in the right district. So Quincy getting done in advance actually helps me out enormously, in the sense that we don't have to use census block calculation, which could result in split precincts. And it gives the House Chair of Redistricting, Mike Moran, the ability to, you know, keep a district where I can say it's a precinct and not a part of a precinct.
Yep, exactly.
I don't anticipate major changes. 101,000 people, my district has to be of just around 46 plus thousand people. And given the fact it's 100,000 people in Quincy, I have a hard time seeing there's going to be a lot of movement in terms of my district. I may swap a ward or two, maybe not with Bruce Ayers, maybe up in Ward 3 or Ward 5, perhaps. You know, and also, you know, Speaker Mariano district has grown, as well as, you know, Weymouth and Holbrook, which he has parts of as well. So there may be a chance of swapping he may be adding a district because Holbrook doesn't grow that much.
Right.
So there may be some of us, you know, moving around the middle part of the city. Obviously, I can't move the peninsulas, neither can Bruce. So, you know, maybe we're going to be moving around the center city, swapping some wards among ourselves to get to the population number.
Yeah, they tried, Nick said they tried very much to use kind of natural boundaries as divisions, things like the railroad tracks or, you know, the Blue Hills or the Atlantic Ocean, for that matter. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, like things like Fersburg Park for Parkway, and
right,
Blacks Creek, and you know, Townbrook, and other natural barriers in the city as well. So,
right.
Those who look at the map do realize they see that with some, you know, little odds and ends. I mean, everything follows Hancock Street, right? You know, one side is Ward 6 and 5, the other side is Ward 3.
Yep, exactly.
Same thing with the train tracks, right? If they can't use Hancock, they move up to Newport Avenue.
Right, right.
So, I haven't seen a map. Now you reminded me I should give a phone call.
Oh, she'll love me for reminding you, I'm sure. But no.
I'll tell you, if you're my constituent currently, there's a good chance you probably still.
You can't get rid of me that easy, right, Tanky? What hearings coming up this week?
I have a hearing coming up on Monday relative to 5G warnings. Cell phone and wireless usage. I do have a hearing regarding digital right to repair, which will give anybody the ability to basically repair anything regardless of warranty and contract. And I mean anything, I mean everything. It's quite an expensive and complicated issue. And then we do have a few things regarding warning notices, consumer awareness on electronic devices beyond cell phones and some other random consumer awareness issues. We're preparing 2 days of hearing in case we have a large number of testifiers. My experience twice on these issues resulted in well into 100 testifiers in person. Given the fact we're in a virtual format, it's very unclear to us exactly who will be signing up. Obviously, I'm getting a lot of written testimony. Again, my email box is packed in right now.
Okay.
Stuff as I'm sorting through people's testimony coming to committee. So this has been actually somewhat of a challenge for us on virtual format, because my entire 26 years working in the State House, including when I was a staffer and working the AG's office, has always been based on actual numbers of past institutional experience about who shows up.
Yep.
Virtual has been very challenging because we do not know, even though do an advanced sign-up sheet, we do not know what the bottom sign-up is going to be.
Anybody can check in at that point, yeah.
It could be 10, it could be 100, it could be more or less. I have no idea. And this is kind of the big challenge. And somebody was watching my Facebook notice that some hearings are all like 30 minutes and some go on for like 4 hours.
Right.
And this is the unpredictability of this job. We're not Congress. I think people have this misconception with Congress. Congress is by invitation. You can't walk off the street into a congressional hearing and say, hey, I want to testify.
No, you can watch it, but you can't participate in it, right?
Correct. It's by invitation.
Yep.
Massachusetts is an open door invitation, open door testimony. And we also can do by invitation testimony in addition to open door. Or we can do by invitation testimony and then have a separate day for open testimony.
Literally is the people's house in Massachusetts. You know, it really is. Yeah.
Absolutely. And obviously we have to be mindful of time and make sure everybody gets a chance to speak. And it was a very busy day and we try to get people to get to the point quickly.
Yeah.
And of course we take longer testimony and writing that we'll read that you don't have to, you know, read in front of us. And that's kind of a big challenge. I think people don't really understand the complexity of trying to balance out people's ability to make the voice heard against, you know, the other 80 people standing behind that person who wants the voice heard.
Yeah, there needs to be some decorum in order to get process happening, right? Yeah.
And the questioning comes through the chair. So if a member of the committee have a question, they have to acknowledge the chair, and the chair acknowledges the member, and the member can ask the question, and the chair has the ability to cut off questioning if they feel that this gets kind of redundant. You know, it's a lot more train traffic management or general traffic management than I think people realize as a chair of a committee.
I think you're right. It's, you know, it's like being an air traffic controller trying to make sure all the planes come in, land safely.
Doing it virtually is much more difficult.
Yeah. Does your committee have any jurisdiction over car dealerships, Techie, or car sales? We've heard some reports of gouging, you know, during these times because of the shortage of vehicles.
We actually have a limited ability to oversee that as a policy matter. We have a car franchising.
Yeah.
Is the big one. So most people don't realize that every car dealership is a franchise of a manufacturer. The laws on car franchising regarding fair equitable contracts between manufacturers and franchisees are by statute on trying to get equitable contracts between both sides. Obviously, both sides keep trying to change the statute.
Mm-hmm.
Equity. And I'm stuck in the middle trying to decide, is this really equitable contracting?
Yeah.
We do have oversight regarding things like the Lemon Law, and we do have oversight regarding things like secondhand car dealers and used cars.
Okay.
But in terms of actual car pricing, no.
Okay.
This is all you may have heard over and over again, and it's some funny car commercials about the word chips. You know, your car is more computer than motor, it feels like these days.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The massive semiconductor shortage globally has had a huge impact on the car industry, as well as third-party parts. So most people realize that even that little knob on your car, you know, comes from another country that gets imported and assembled in the US. You know, so what happens is that you can't get all the parts, the cars have to be sold to spec. So if they advertise that you have brown knobs, you can't put black knobs in.
Okay.
You know, because it has been made to spec. Otherwise, it's kind of consumer deception.
Right. Yes. I know the Attorney General's gotten involved in a couple of cases because of deceptive marketing practices.
Yeah. And this is the kind of thing about products in the U.S. I mean, you can buy it's not defective, but not to spec, but still perfectly fine. It's like buying Edmunds, right? There's an Edmunds, bakery of defective baked goods.
Yeah.
I think it was in Stoughton or something like that. And I can't remember exactly where. There's a funny story about a Curbs right next door to it, which I find amusing. Yeah.
I think it was in Braintree, actually, but I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. It was one of those funny moments. I'm like, there's an exercise place and Edmunds 50 to 90% discount store next to it. No, that's bad for people who are trying to control their sweet tooth.
Yeah, that's too much temptation.
So the Edmunds baked goods are fine. They just don't look right.
Right. Okay.
Right. But you know that going in because you can see the package and you want the discount and you're like, okay, well, it looks all right. But if you try to buy like a $30,000 car and you expect the thing to be spec and there's stuff that isn't,
yeah,
that's not going to sell well with customers.
Right. Yeah. The market will almost regulate itself in that matter for sure. You know,
exactly. Nobody in this call wants to get a non-spec vehicle at that price. So you're right about the price gouging, because right now used cars are in very high demand because you can buy used cars easily. And you know, try to spend top dollar on getting used cars and then, you know, resell them at a higher price, which can result in price gouging if it doesn't meet the market rate. That's the question. What is the market rate?
TBD, right? Yeah.
Let it kind of unfold on its own.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Want to talk a little bit about national politics and what's going on with the infrastructure package on Capitol Hill in Washington?
Yeah, the infrastructure package is extremely important to everybody, including Massachusetts. You know, I don't have to tell you guys, you all know roads and bridges aren't great. You guys are aware of potholes, and I get those phone calls too, as you can imagine. And I drive these same streets. So, you know, getting infrastructure money to the local and state level, and, you know, obviously federal projects, you know, and federal highways, you know, is crucial for us. Mm-hmm. Also as a job stimulus. I know the economy is running really hot and unemployment's under 6%. And I know there's still workforce shortage. There's a lot of interesting dynamics in this economy right now, but, you know, it actually will continue to keep moving the economy forward for many years, you know, with expansion of infrastructure package. So, I mean, I'm kind of troubled that people want to hold hostage your better infrastructure in your life, for political gain.
Mm. So do you think, you're in favor of the $1 trillion package? What about the $3.5 trillion one?
Well, I mean, the federal government needs to pay its bills. And once again, we're playing Russian roulette with the debt ceiling, which seems like a regular occurrence for the last, I don't know.
How many times has that can been kicked down the road?
It doesn't matter what political party's in power. It's always the same posture, right?
That's so true.
If you're the party not in power, you got a posture to stop it.
Yep.
If you're the party in power, you're trying to move it forward.
It's, you know, it's predictable even before it happens. Yeah.
It's 100% predictable. It doesn't matter whose party is in power. The other side is going to adopt the position the other one did last time out.
That's right. Yeah.
Typical Washington, D.C. party politics, yep. Right? It's the same script, just the other one's using it this time.
And that's right.
If there's a switch around in next cycle on Congress, it'll be the other way around. It's just how it's done down there. And if you are a longtime observer, you will know notice heavily this pattern's pretty blatant, right? So, but I mean, there's some folks there playing, you know, Powerball because they're trying to see if they can gamble by holding out their votes to get a big package. And this isn't like a standard vote where I'm trying to get something locally. They're trying to push a degree of national public policy by holding out, as opposed to, you know, hey, I got like this bridge that's like 100 years old and it's crumbling. Can I get a little help here?
Right.
You know, it's not like you're seeing in typical TV dramas, which is actually a tad of truth in those TV dramas, where people are holding out the votes because they have a real constituent or local need that's essential to the quality of life for the people they represent.
Yep.
These folks are holding out for national policy agendas.
Yeah, it's and for folks who are not Washington observers and they observe this from the sidelines, it can be troubling. It can be demoralizing. You know, it can be depressing to watch because you don't understand the dynamics of the politics going on behind the scene. You think it's factual and set in stone.
Yeah, and also a reflection of a smaller party majority margin, right? Everyone knows it's the 50-50 Senate.
Right.
But the House Democrats are working also a very small margin as well in terms of holding the votes together. So it basically empowers pretty much everyone when you have a tight vote margin in both political parties, especially the party of the majority that only has a small majority. And the Senate, literally everybody's been empowered
right.
at a 50-50 Senate, despite the fact you do have Kamala Harris's tie-breaking vote.
Yep. So
everyone's been empowered now in both sides to try to leverage the position for something or something, so to speak.
That's right.
It forces bipartisan cooperation in the Senate. Now, in the House, you know, even though I have only a small margin of Democrats holding the House, you know, now they're forced to negotiate with the minority party, the Republican Party, as well as a small number of the House members to try to further that they can get something done. And given the fact that, you know, people claim they talk to each other, then don't want to talk to each other, then claim the other one doesn't want to talk to each other. I mean, come on, folks. I mean, we're not that stupid. And this is something annoying about these guys down there. We're not that dumb, folks.
Yeah, give us a little more credit than that. Exactly. Yeah. But it really does show on a large scale how, you know, the cliche, every vote counts. In that case, it really does.
Oh, absolutely. And, like myself, I do believe in holding our congressional delegation accountable, as well as like to hold my own ward counselor and counselors in the mayor accountable at my level as a constituent of the city of Quincy.
Right. Yep.
So even though I'm a sitting elected, doesn't mean I do not have the same gripes and feelings as the rest of you do listening on this call and the same levels of frustration. So while I do have a great relationship with our congressional district, a congressional delegation, I do, share some of these same frustrations with all you do as well.
Yep, absolutely. Some fun stuff coming up in the city, Tacky, we might want to remind folks about, like the food truck festival this weekend.
Yeah, it's great to do another big outdoor event. People love food trucks, which is a big part of it. And it's a good family fun day. And again, the weather is going to be a perfect fall weather, bring a jacket, but it looks like it'll be some bright sun. So that'll be good. I have to be honest with you. I'm not been paying much to social calendar at home. I really need to open the Quincy Sun straight to the social sections as opposed to reading City Hall news on a
Friday. Yes.
Hopefully we have a good Halloween coming up, and I haven't heard about the fall festivals. I generally hear about fall festivals, but I think a lot of PTOs were relatively hesitant because it was unsure what the fall was going to look like.
Yeah, and Arts Fest has been canceled until next May, unfortunately, so that won't be happening.
Yeah, and there's not too much else going on.
Well, there is going to be a Christmas parade though this year.
Oh, thank you for telling me there's a Christmas parade. I generally do not know until I get the letter in my mail telling me to be at the Christmas parade.
Yes, it will happen. It's the Sunday after Thanksgiving, so it is going to happen this year.
Well, I've been one when it was 70 degrees and one when it was 30 degrees, so see which one we're going to get this year.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm assuming there will be a Thanksgiving Day football game this year, too.
I would think so. I mean, last year they kind of pulled it off, if I remember correctly, in a very controlled manner.
Right.
And high school sports and any sports right now, it doesn't matter if it's collegiate or professional or even local leagues, there's still a high degree of caution going on.
Yes.
Regarding COVID because of the nature of close contact. And again, just because you feel great doesn't mean you can't be a carrier.
Yeah. And I know Interfaith Social Services, they're having kind of a hybrid version of their Feed the Hungry Gala fundraiser. So some in person, some on Zoom. The South Shore Y is having their Taste of the South Shore, all virtual. Dove is doing the same. So, people are still using caution for sure.
Absolutely. And, I do understand some folks are holding some in-person fundraisers politically. It is election cycle for the locals. Yep. And obviously I'm very conscientious as another elected official regarding different cycles and local fundraising. I've obviously restrained myself from fundraising this year locally for a combination of reasons. One, obviously the coronavirus, I'm very aware of the people who show up at my fundraisers and the age, and oddly enough, I know some people's medical histories because they're friends, right? So I don't like to put people at risk. But secondly, it's still tough out there. I do really appreciate the donors who gave me $25, but it's still right tough. People had a tough last year economically, and they're now back to work, and I don't really feel comfortable asking people for money when people are just getting back on their feet.
Yeah, costs have gone up across the board. Cost of living, as you well know, and food and energy, especially.
Inflation.
Yeah.
Inflation in this country is kind of curious because most people are taught inflation by overprinting money, meaning you have more money out there that devalues your money. And that isn't happening here. This is really a supply-demand issue, this passing inflation. So as particularly product manufacturing and product limitation occurs, the value goes up because of a higher demand. And we saw that last year on cleaning products, right?
Yep.
People bought more cleaning products, even though the supply was actually not a problem. It's just they couldn't keep it on the shelves, which caused a market to shift up. Conversely, as we talked about the microchip shortage, appliances and other electronic devices require these semiconductors have a price hike because there's a manufacturing shortage, which also caused inflation.
Yep.
So this country's inflation is a little curious because, like I said, we're normally taught it's by a massive influx of new printed money. In this case, it's a massive amount of stimulus by the federal government in particular, and also preventing bankruptcies as often as possible because of stimulus money and financial assistance, as well as unemployment benefits to make sure people try to get the rent paid, other central needs are not met, keeping money moving in our service commercial-based economy, because we're that's what we are. We're, United States is a commercial service-based economy. We're not a manufacturing-driven economy.
Not anymore, yeah.
Yeah, we're all about moving money. Your money that you spend at the store moves our economy. It creates right. the whole cycle. So we're facing that type of inflation. And, you know, there's a lot of, I mean, going back to this stimulus bill for transportation and infrastructure improvements, there's some questions about, you know, whether we need to do this. One, we do need to do this, folks. Infrastructure needs help. But there's going to be another economic stimulus created by the infrastructure package in terms of the ripple effect on products you need to put, like concrete, steel.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to hire more labor to do more construction.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, engineers and accountants and all the backroom folks. And of course, you know, all those folks that have money working a job can now put that money back in the economy,
yep.
food, entertainment, and retail. So
yep.
that's, that will may or may not cause more inflation as well, because now you're pushing people's dollars more into it. And that's, you know, it's like a snake eating its tail, right? If you don't have economy moving, you know, then unemployment's going to go up and people aren't spending, you know, and everything stops. On the flip side, it's running so hot with people who do have some money, who are now making up for things they couldn't buy before because of supply shortages in the past. But there's new kinds of supply shortages. Now we also have inflation, certain
yeah.
places, you know, food, energy. Energy is a global problem because of a number of different oil and natural gas issues occurring, because a lot of economies are opening and closing at random times caused yeah. by COVID. It's not even quite random. It's just COVID driven.
Yeah.
And also everything from including overseas goods. I mean, there are massive, you know, port tankers trapped in both coastlines, and not just on our coastlines, coastlines globally, because of a lack of people to work getting cargo, massive cargo ships unloaded. And also COVID. I mean, mm-hmm. China had shut down the second biggest port because of a COVID outbreak.
Yeah, so it's mm-hmm. we're nowhere near stabilized yet. And it's why the Fed is talking about raising interest rates next year.
Yeah, and everyone gets scared when they hear that. But I mean, you guys have all seen your checking accounts and what interest you're getting. I mean,
so it's non-existent. Yeah.
I mean, there's basically no benefit to
just stuff it in the mattress, folks. You know, that's the best thing. Yeah.
It's not really much there. And,
right.
Borrowing has slowed down a little bit. I mean, because there is not enough supply in Massachusetts for housing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a high demand, but not enough supply, which again commands the top dollar for the remaining supply
right.
of housing. But I mean, people aren't taking as many loans in the months of July and August. And I think September numbers aren't going to show a very high housing sale either. You know, borrowing, it doesn't happen as much when you have a little extra dollars in your pocket.
True, too. Yeah.
Last year, I mean, we don't have a shortage of wood, but we did a lot of home improvement.
I'm sure
some people took loans out, but I think some people was able to pay cash.
Yep. Yep. For cars too, I think as well. So that has an impact on that market too. Yeah. Curious. Have you heard, I know you have, relatives in Canada. We haven't had an update from you on how the pandemic's doing up there.
Yeah. We haven't had a family meeting in a little while, so we haven't really heard from them, but they did
okay.
check with a family in Melbourne because it was an earthquake.
Oh,
it was like a 6.5, and they're fine. They despite the TV coverage, a lot of structural damage was to a lot of older buildings, I was told. So they're okay. They're looking at about an 80% first shot rate right now in the Melbourne area.
Okay.
They're thinking right around that number. So they've been, you know, that's a good sign for a country that's now wintertime Delta that really couldn't get vaccine.
Yes.
So as you guys know, you may have a national average and you have a, you know, whatever the local number is,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, you know, Massachusetts has 77% for a shot, but the country as a whole is like, what, closing in like mid-60s?
Something like that, yeah.
So, you know, my cousin tells me in the Melbourne region, they think it's right about 80%-ish from that for a shot.
Okay. That's
but good. Naturally, you know, it's about half as much a national level in Australia. So
yeah.
that's kind of, I mean, I just did a quick check and make sure they're safe. You
know, after the earthquake. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I hadn't heard that. Interesting. Okay. Of course, the population in Australia is sparse compared to the United States. It's basically, you know, the eastern portion of the continent.
I mean, you're correct. I mean, it's the eastern side, and it's all coastline based.
Right.
Coastline based country slash continent. So you know, it's also very densely populated. I mean, I haven't been back there since 2016. So, but I remember everything's a grid, which is actually pretty amazing. Like,
yes,
grid, and it was packed. It is a packed area.
So, and how about Canada? Have you heard anything out of Canada?
No, I haven't had a chance to talk to my my mom's cousins and uncles in Toronto and Vancouver. Things are better. My sister-in-law, my brother's wife, you know, and their family went up during Labor Day weekend when they finally opened the borders up.
Okay.
Personnel. And, you know, they came back and things seem to be all right. I mean, everyone's safe in the family level. But you know, there's still a lot of hesitation up there. I think people in the U.S. didn't understand the level of brunt of our neighbors to the north. They had, particularly, again, I mean, they were top 15 economy, and they couldn't get vaccine.
So
they were bunkered in many ways longer than we have, including healthcare workers. Couldn't get enough vaccine for healthcare workers. But now they're vaccinating an immense clip. They're actually outpacing us.
They knew a good thing when they got it.
Well, apparently, we need to learn some lessons from our neighbors around us. When you're without and it shows up and you've seen the impact of going without, you know, the desire to be safe seems to be much more heightened.
Yeah. See how the booster program rolls out here now.
Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of issues, right? One, it is Moderna, Johnson & Johnson. Moderna is going to submit their first results on boosters sometime soon.
Mm-hmm.
And Johnson & Johnson is looking to do that probably deeper into the winter months. There's a lot of news stories out there, but until their actual studies are provided to FDA and CDC, I mean, it's just news stories, right?
Right.
So, you know, people are now getting able to get Pfizer, those who have Pfizer and meet the current federal requirements over 65 or have severe health issues, immune compromise, those folks, you know, are prioritized first, very similar to how we rolled out the initial vaccine way back. It feels like a lifetime back in.
I know.
Right.
But it's not. It's earlier this year. Yeah.
And they're still talking about mix and match, right? If you had Johnson & Johnson or Moderna, can you take a Pfizer booster? Countries like Thailand have already started that process. And I've not seen or heard any news about how that is going.
Yeah.
We've always been taught don't mix and match your medication.
Right, right. Yeah.
So, I mean, that study is also ongoing about whether that makes sense or does it create a potential danger. I've not heard news out of Thailand about how that's going, but they started doing that. They did have the medical workers was the first group.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, either the Chinese Sinovac or Pfizer or Moderna, and then you kind of like, you got your Chinese Sinovac, two shots, and then 3 months later, they gave you Pfizer. I don't know how that works. Not even a non-U.S. vaccine. It's not like, you know, the Chinese vaccine makers are talking to U.S. vaccine makers.
Yes, right. And we're still learning so much as we go through this. It's interesting because even during the 1918 pandemic, it took about 2 years, really, before things were somewhat normalized again. So it's looking like even, you know, over 100 years later, it's still going to take about 2 years.
Oh, here's a chilling statistic. The we've exceeded the 1918 flu death rate.
Yeah.
The approximate death rate believed is about 650,000-ish people in the U.S. I say approximate because just like COVID-19, not every death has been diagnosed as COVID-19 related because of various reasons, right? And conversely, not every person with COVID-19 died of COVID-19. You could have had a stroke because you are not in great shape and you just happen to be COVID-infected, right?
Yes, yep.
So, you know, that's also something to keep in mind. But, you know, we crossed the 675 barrier. You know, I have no reason not to believe that number will slow down.
Mm-hmm.
More people died of COVID-19 than World War I and World War II combined, which is about 512 or 15,000-ish people died total in the U.S., servicemen and civilian casualties during World War II. So, you know, this disease is closing in on being the highest killer you know, and now we're looking at Civil War numbers, which is the largest single deaths of U.S. folks in a military conflict in our history, is the U.S. Civil War. So, so yeah, I did a quick look. I think about 1.2 million plus people died in U.S. military conflicts in totality-ish around that zone. You know, 675, and we've seen the counts in the Deep South of the death rate. You know, if that isn't sobering to y'all, I don't know what is.
Yeah, food for thought for sure. I know there's here in Quincy, there's going to be a couple of memorial tree plantings in October to remember those who passed from COVID here in Quincy.
Yeah, about 125 or 124-ish people passed from Quincy last time I checked. But we're closing, we probably surpassed 10,000 people that have been confirmed positive.
Yes.
So it's about 100,000 plus people. Well, that's about 10% of your population have tested positive. At COVID sometime during this past 18-month period that we're aware of.
Right.
And that's a lot of people when you think about it. We put it in percentage of size of population.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. It's the reason I think, you know, telemedicine's not going to go away anytime soon.
Nope, I have a telemedicine call next week.
Oh.
I will have an in-person physical finally in November.
Okay.
Stuff like blood draws have to be done in person, right?
Yeah, you can't take your own blood and mail it in.
Exactly. So I'm overdue for my physical because COVID, again, delayed a lot of our routine medical care.
Right.
So I got a couple of routine appointments coming up for the first time in like 2 years.
Yes, yeah. And what I learned is that telemedicine appointments are treated by your insurance company just like in-person appointments.
Absolutely. I mean, people should be aware that your both regular physical care and your mental health care is covered by insurance. We passed the telemedicine law back at the beginning of this year when session, because our session closes the swearing in day. So in January, before swearing in day, we passed those things and sent them out to government. That is one of the silver linings of COVID is that adopted a new way of doing medicine that's proven to be effective in a real life situation.
Yep. And it includes mental health counseling too. So folks should be aware of that too. Yep.
Physical and mental.
Yep.
Obviously some stuff, like I said, blood draws, you have to go in person.
Yeah. There are some things. Yeah.
X-rays, blood draws, CTs. I mean, you still got to do those things in person. So,
right.
But I mean, people should take advantage of these resources.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Anything else on your mind today, Techie?
What isn't on my mind? You know, I just got back from a wonderful event with the Norfolk County Labor Council and Creator of Crayons with a major donation of $13,000 plus big check. But, you know, Bob Rizzi announced that the Labor Council raised up to $16,000 for Creator of Crayons, a wonderful, important charity as we come closer into the Winter Munster services they provide, you know, for kids.
It's great.
Especially on the essential needs and winter coats and things like that as we head to that time of year, it is crucial. And it's great to see the mayor and councilors Liang and DeBona and Mahoney and McCarthy there this morning and, you know, talking to my good friends in labor as well. And, you know, all the things they've been doing, people don't realize, especially supporting United Way. They've been supporting United Way for over 80 years, the AFL-CIO.
Hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. I think a lot of people didn't know that. I mean, our good friends in labor has been very supportive, one of the biggest organizations to provide services to a lot of not-for-profits. It was good to see Liberty Bay Credit Union as well, being a strong supporter. The Local 103, the Pipefitters, Local 104, IPW, you know, a lot of folks were there in force showing the support for this important organization.
That's great. So I remember when Cradles Crayons got its start up in Myrtle Street in North Quincy, and President Clinton came to the opening ceremonies, actually.
Yeah, and the mayor reminded us about the importance of this organization and, you know, the important work they've done for decades now to families in Quincy and the South Shore. Definitely. So that was my, it was outdoors, folks, just to let you know.
Okay.
Breeze, and I was quite comfortable doing that event.
Yes.
Mail-in voting applications for November are available.
Yes.
At the end of October. I'm sure Nikki's going to come on and talk about that with you.
She has already done that. Yeah, absolutely.
Watch QATV for instructions or visit the City Clerk's website. But I mean, if you're not feeling comfortable in November to vote in person, I mean, actually, oddly enough, September was not that bad for me, I thought. Nice weather, pick a quiet time of day and voted. But if you're uncomfortable in the winter months because obviously indoors and colder, you know, mail-in ballot is an option of yep. local. And I encourage everyone again to please do vote, whether in person, early voting, or absentee ballot, because you're after the deadline for mail-in voting. But no excuse. Absentee ballot voting applications are now available on the website.
Yes, and there's a drop box right outside of City Hall, so you don't even have to go inside if you don't want to, and you don't have to mail it if you don't want to either. Just drop it off in that box.
Yep, and you can take care of that. So just be aware, folks, that you can get your voice heard this November.
How do folks get their voice heard by you, Tacky?
Well, give us a call, 617-722-2014, 617-722-2014. Hit a button and the staff will get back to you. Staff is back from vacation. I know I'll repeat again. I know August had a little bit of a hiccup regarding that. You can text me at, not text me, email me.
Yes.
We get a lot of texts. Email me at tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. Tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. I just told you my mailbox fills up quickly. And of course, my state representative, Tacky Chan, Facebook page, we do posts, obviously public hearings and other types of useful information you may find useful. We do little graphics and things like that, easy to read stuff and links to various resources that may be good. And tackychan.org has mm-hmm. Phone numbers and websites of service organizations, again, ways of maybe not having to call me and you can just look it up. But obviously, if you give us a call, you need something, we try our best.
Yeah, that's a big shout out to your staff, Tacky. They're excellent. I've had a great response from Maeve and Yeji. That they really are great.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate. I tell people, you're only good as the people you have around you.
Well, you've got some excellent people for sure. Can we catch up next week?
I'll talk to you next week. You have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks, Tacky. You too.